Florida's craft brewers fight for your right to party in their tap rooms. That conversation is just ahead. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in on this Thursday. I'm Melissa Ross. Just ahead, don't miss it. We're going to take your calls about Florida's big battle over beer. Yes, beer. Get on the line right now, 549-2937. Then later, actor-director Daniel Baldwin. Yeah, one of the Baldwin brothers will join the show about his appearance this weekend at the St. Augustine Film Festival. And The Spectator will step by with all your weekend events. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, the war over beer in Florida is heating up. Now, the people who brew and sell beer around the state are not exactly clinking glasses these days. Instead, they're at odds. And these disputes, pardon all the puns, are coming to a head. Now, there are several points of contention, but the big battle is between the state's larger beer distributors and the small business owners who run craft breweries. They're a huge and growing section of the market. The state's craft brewers want to be able to sell their product to you, the consumer, in 64-ounce jugs called growlers, but that is currently banned in Florida. They also would like the freedom to serve you beer in their local tap rooms. That's something that's being challenged. There was some boozy discussion about this yesterday in the state capitol, although as far as I can tell, no alcohol was actually served. However, Ben Davis, owner of Jacksonville's Intuition Ale Works, is here now in studio after testifying about all this yesterday in Tallahassee. Hi, Ben. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. Thanks for having me in.
And here's our question to callers. We want to know your thoughts and questions right now. When it comes to Florida's beer battles, get on the line with your questions, 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. You can email and tweet the show, and we also welcome your comments on Facebook. So, Ben, in a moment, we'll talk about the hearing you were part of yesterday, but first, for people who haven't followed this closely, this issue has been kind of brewing, another pun, I can't help myself, has been brewing in the state for a while. What is the argument all about?
I mean, there's two, I would say, issues. One are existing regulations that we deal with on a regular basis, and some are very good. Some protect us. Some are very key to our success and the growth as an industry. But then there obviously are always issues, you know, that are existing or would like to have change for us. I mean, for us, obviously the half-gallon growler issue is frustrating because it's the industry standard. We are the only state in the country right now where it is banned.
The only state?
Yes.
And what exactly is banned?
In the statute, it basically says that any container of beer that is greater than a quart and less than a gallon is illegal. So we have this donut hole in our container size. And also, I mean, majority of states in this country don't even define what size beer can come in, you know, and my feeling is the market should decide that.
There was a fight about this in the last legislative session, and it wasn't resolved. You're going to try again this spring to get the legislature to give you and your colleagues, people who run craft breweries around the state, approval to sell beer in these growlers, right?
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, that's the hope. But that's not the only fight that's going on, right? There's another matter that's sort of popped up.
Well, I mean, yes. Yeah, so last year during the legislative session, basically nothing was nothing happened. We had a bill passed on the Senate side. Luckily, on the House, we have enough allies, and they never even allowed that a companion bill to even be heard. So that was, you know, kind of a neutral. You know, nobody won, nobody really lost. This year, we're obviously going to ask for half-gallon growlers, but our opposition, I believe, has a long-term goal of coming after our tap rooms and how much beer we can sell out of our tap room. What we can sell, things like that. And that's what's concerning. I mean, there was actually a legal action taken a couple weeks ago by four different entities to they're basically suing the state and to require them to clearly define what is considered a tap room and how you can issue tap room licenses. So I don't believe that's something, once it's clarified by the state, it's just going to go away. I mean, they're going to continue hammering this issue.
And if you're just joining us right now, we're speaking with Ben Davis of Jacksonville's Intuition Ale Works. What are your questions about the battle over how Florida's beer is marketed and sold. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. So Intuition Ale Works has a tap room, a popular local tap room. Tell us a little bit about how your business works and how much of what you're brewing up is sold that way.
Sure. So, I mean, your first year as a startup brewery, that revenue that comes in from your tap room is very important. Also, your tap room gives you an opportunity to market your beers to consumers. You know, for us, we try to have 20 different beers on tap. Obviously, we do not distribute 20 beers outside of our brewery. We don't, you know, you walk into Publix, we have four beers that we can. And so, again, it's, you know, it's a marketing opportunity, plus it's a source of revenue. But, you know, as you grow, typically your tap room business doesn't expand. You don't have more revenue coming in from it. So for us, I mean, our distribution now, we did the equivalent of 15,000 kegs last year, and about basically 1,000 of those were out of our tap room.
And the big beer guys, Anheuser-Busch, for example, I'm just throwing that out as a name, what they're arguing before the state lawmakers is these tap rooms need more regulation.
Well,
and more strict definition of what is and is not a tap room.
Well, I mean, I'd like to kind of clarify who our opposition is. I mean, from, you know, the larger breweries, Miller Coors, Anheuser-Busch, are not involved. You know, our issue right now, unfortunately, is with the two wholesaler trade groups and ABC Liquors and the Florida Retail Federation. So, unfortunately, we've kind of getting ganged up on now, which is, you know, previous to this, we've been battling the wholesaler groups. I don't believe right now that the larger breweries are involved with this, but it is concerning that the people that we do business with, our partners in this industry, are coming after us.
What, and why do you think they are?
I think it's paranoia. I think it is they've been told by folks who have some influence that, you know, well, if we don't address this taproom issue, Anheuser-Busch is going to open up tap rooms all over this country. State that Miller or Coors are going to open up tap rooms, and people are no longer going to come into your grocery store or Total Wine or ABC Liquors, Whole Foods, whoever, and buy beer from you anymore, because that whole business can be taken away because it's going to be more readily available from the source.
By the way, the grocery stores are also lobbying in Tallahassee. They want to be able to sell liquor in their stores, not go next door to a separate little storefront. That's sure. Another beer issue.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's
and
a
liquor
lot of
issue. Yeah, they, like, so this is really a hot issue in the state. Clearly, there wouldn't be this much back and forth going on, Ben, if there weren't big business in craft breweries. It's really a growing sector of the market, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's huge. I mean, it's probably the, you know, craft breweries in the state of Florida are probably the fastest growing industry. You know, when we opened up in 2010, I would estimate there was probably in the 30 to 40 range as far as number of craft breweries. I think right now we're estimating there's about 90. So we've, and still in Florida, we're about 4% of the market. So you imagine 90 breweries, 4% of the market. There's obviously still a huge amount of growth for us.
And you see an upward trajectory for Intuition Ale Works, however these legal battles shake out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, our goal is to go statewide and then evaluate, you know, where we want to go from there.
And by the way, you come by this honestly. Not many people might know that you are from the Davis family. You're related to the folks who founded Winn-Dixie.
Yes, yeah. I think that's where I get my, or I know that's where I get my entrepreneurial
that's
spirit.
That's where you got it from.
Yeah.
Lots of calls for you, meanwhile, as
sure.
We speak with Jacksonville's Ben Davis, owner of Intuition Ale Works. What are your questions about this battle over beer in Florida? 549-2937 is the number to join us. Edward in Riverside. Hey, Edward, good morning. Edward, okay, give us a call back. The number to join the show, 549-2937. Let's go to Mike in Jacksonville now. Hi, Mike. Good morning to you. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Beer is certainly a big political there's a lot of skullduggery around beer. I remember a friend of mine owned a bar down at the beaches, and I don't know if people know it, but there's more than one Australian beer out there, but you wouldn't know it because of how Foster's does what they do to kind of lock up their share of the market. But that's kind of an aside. You answered part of my question already, which was who your opposition is, but Can you elaborate maybe a little bit on the political players who were involved? Who's moving this issue politically? On the surface, it seems to be a pretty ridiculous issue, being that we're the only state really pursuing this sort of nonsense. So can you shed a little bit of light on some of the political players? I understand you might be hesitant to do so too directly because you're trying to get some goodwill going, but if you can maybe illuminate that, that might be, you know, it might give us some opportunities to maybe give some calls, contact them, contact people who are maybe supporting you. Can you maybe give us a little bit of info on that?
Thanks so much for that, Mike in Jacksonville.
Sure. I mean, for us right now, we're very, very optimistic in the legislature. Senator Rob Bradley had hosted a workshop yesterday.
He's from this area.
Sure.
Yeah.
And he might drink intuition, but
did you bring like a six pack with you into this meeting to soften him up? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding around. Okay. But what about his question?
So, I mean, we have right now, we've got a lot of allies. They've seen what's been going on the last 2 years. As I said, there is a pending legal challenge, which obviously would not create a whole lot of goodwill when you see someone trying to go around the system. So right now we've got a really favorable bill in the House being pushed by Representative Stubbe, who I think is on the west coast of Florida. And then we, on the Senate side, there is going to be a bill coming out of the Regulated Industries Committee that is chaired by Rob Bradley that will help us. So right now we're very optimistic, but we know that unfortunately our opposition will not go quietly. Typically, you know, historically, Big Beer has been very involved politically and financially in campaigns and supporting the parties in the state. So they have a lot of influence, and that's typically who will cause us problems.
And we'll go to your tweets, emails, and Facebook comments in just a moment. If you're just tuning in, right now we're speaking with Ben Davis, owner of Intuition Ale Works in Riverside. The battle is heating up between the state's craft brewers and the bigger wholesalers, distributors of beer. What are your questions? 549-2937. Let's go now to David on the north side. Hi, David. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great, thanks.
Hey, I just have a quick question. My family and I love to drink a lot of the local brewers around here, Intuition, Bold City, just some of those. And over the years, we just started collecting some of the growlers. And most recently at One Spark, I actually bought one of the One Spark growlers. And I'm just wondering, is it still possible for us to come and refill those, or are you guys just not selling the growlers anymore?
Yeah, thanks for the question, David. You're not selling them right now, correct?
No. I mean, we still sell the quarts and the gallons because those are legal. Nothing will change with that. The issue for us is as I said, you know, half-gallon growlers are legal and 49 other states. So we just had a woman come in a couple of weeks ago from New Mexico with her growlers that we can't fill. It's illegal for us to put beer in a half gallon of growlers.
It's a jug.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a 64 ounce jug.
Sure. So, I mean, that's the issue. It is, you know, growlers right now, quarts and gallons, you can still fill and that won't change. It's just, what is the future as far as the half gallons go?
549-2937. Rick in Riverside. Hey, Rick, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm doing well. As a resident of Riverside, I'm not really in support of more, you know, alcohol-imbibing people walking the streets. But I have to say that I think the two distributing companies that your guest mentioned before are anti-competitive forces. And I saw them at work when a friend of mine purchased the store. They dictated, you know, what the owner would buy, how much they would buy it for, even how much of it they would buy. So anything that weakens that anti-competitive force, I think, is a good thing. I believe if the Republican legislature, it wants to be true to its support of entrepreneurial innovators, they're going to defeat this bill. But I have a funny feeling that, you know, those legislators are going to vote their wallets. No doubt the small businessman can't compete with the campaign contributions that larger businesses can. So I think you're going to see, you know, a bill passed, at least in some form. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Okay, what about his comments? If the Republicans who lead the legislature are paying lip service to this idea of an unfettered free market, is opposing your group of craft small craft breweries in opposition to those principles.
Well, I mean, I would not say that's the case now. I mean, as I said, we've got a favorable bill that's been filed by a Republican that we are all in favor of. And I know that Senator Bradley is working on a bill that will benefit us also. So, you know, I mean, there obviously are always party politics when you get into any sort of issue with the legislature. And I agree. I mean, you know, the Republicans I was familiar with growing up, you know, there was a lot less involvement in regulations and things like that. So, you know, you would like them to kind of focus on let's, you know, create more jobs and support Florida-based businesses.
And lots of comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. No way I can read them all. Let me just read a few. Elizabeth, I want craft beer, not cans of beer-flavored water. I'm never going to buy the other stuff. I don't see big coffee makers trying to shut down Bold Beans, she writes. Angela, I can't believe we're still having these battles. The consumers of Florida have spoken loud and clear. We don't want politics and big money messing with our local craft beer community. Here are just a few emails from listeners. Linda, since the chamber is trying to create support for this, where have they thrown their support? No one is going to come to town for a destination liquor store crawl. That's an interesting question from her. Has the chamber weighed in on this with you guys?
I'm not aware of that. You know, we typically don't get a whole lot of support outside of our own industry. I've learned that kind of the best we can hope for is neutrality, kind of no comment.
And Scott emails the show, I'm opposed to the growler. Florida is a spring break capital. I don't want my son to have them available. That's the argument against it, isn't it? We don't want to let people have access to this huge container of alcohol and walk out with it.
I mean, honestly, that argument's ridiculous. You can walk into Total Wine, buy a keg. You know, there are 24 packs of beer. A friend of mine was in Costco the other day, and they had a 48-pack of beer. So single us out for a container that we use that's basically people aren't familiar with. You know, there's no issues with the size of beer that you can get in other accounts and with other breweries.
Here's a tweet from Joey. What can we do at the local level to create a friendly environment for craft breweries?
I mean, I believe we have a very friendly environment. I mean, keep drinking our beer obviously helps. You know, I think that people need to realize that it is a complicated industry. There are a lot of factors involved, and that you know, reaching out to your legislators, helping them. You know, for us, it's very important that we inform them of what we're about. I've had quite a few into the brewery, and they see what we are. They get an understanding of it. And so that for us is very key. But our fans should, you know, do the same.
549-2937. What are your questions about Florida's beer battles? Alex in Ponte Vedra. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering a little bit more about the local level in the economic scale, because I'm a big fan of Intuition. Love it. Haven't hit the tap room yet. New transplant switches. But I love my local tap rooms from Cigar City and some other places that I've been. How come we're not getting as much of a push from the local level when they are an economic boom to the area, giving life to the neighborhoods and, I'm sure, more tax dollars?
Alex, thanks for the question. Alex out of Ponte Vedra right now.
Well, I mean, we are getting support from the local level. Councilwoman Boyer actually was working on, and I'm pretty sure passed, a revamping of our zoning issues that affected breweries and opened up breweries being able to open in kind of new zoning districts that were previously not allowed. You know, and honestly, I mean, most alcohol, when Prohibition was repealed, the federal government basically said, okay, the states figure out how to regulate alcohol. So, you know, it's our impact and where we get things done are at the state level.
Interesting. Scott in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Scott. Oh, we lost Scott's call. Let me get a few more comments from Facebook on the air from our listeners. Let's see here. Scott, another Scott writes, Ben Davis and Intuition are great for Jacksonville, and they are spot on in their position. Regulations are for consumer safety, not to give a competitive advantage. Here's one from Tyler. I love the product, and the local brewery scene makes the whole city better. Let's go now to Julie in San Marco. Go ahead, Julie.
How old is the law that bans the sale of the 64-ounce growlers, and what is the magic with that size, if you could buy something greater, and from both sides? And from your side, is it a cost factor and whether you sell it in a 64-ounce growler or whether what prevents you from selling just now?
Yeah.
I understand the market. You want the market to dictate it, but what is the big issue with the 64-ounce growler?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Julie.
Why don't you just avoid it?
Yeah, thanks, Julie, for that. Isn't it true that a lot of these laws have been on the books since Prohibition?
Yes.
So that explains some of it, but what about her question?
Yes, I mean, the container size laws, my understanding, were created in the 60s. They've been on the books for 50-plus years. So they're obviously outdated. The issue with the half-gallon growler, one, it's for me, it's a matter of pride when it's legal in basically every other state. It's kind of always liken it to in South Carolina when they used to have the mini bottles. And people just said, wow, that's strange. I think it's the same thing for us. It's the industry standard. You know, I walk into a brewery in Colorado and ask for a growler of IPA, it's a half gallon.
But it's just a quirk in Florida law that has kept this ban on the books for so long?
Yeah. I mean, they changed the law in 2001 to allow larger format bottles, what we call like bombers, which are 22-ounce bottles, because those were illegal. And it also allowed a lot of imports to come in that were metric sizes. But,
speaking of which, Michael emails the show, use metric measurement, sell it in 2-liter size containers. That will confuse the legislature.
Well, it's really not the legislature. It's the guys with guns that show up to your brewery if you're breaking the law.
So as you said, you've now got legislation pending on this. Where do you go from here?
I mean, I'll probably spend a lot of time driving back and forth, to Tallahassee. And it's just, I mean, that's when the bills start moving, that's when we need the support. That's when we need our fans to reach out to the legislature and talk about what we do for neighborhoods, what we do for the community, and how we, I believe, improve the quality of life. And that's what we need to hit on and keep the message positive. I know people are kind of cynical with politics, but, really that has no place in what we're trying to get done.
Ben Davis, owner of Intuition Aleworks, a fascinating topic, and we so appreciate you coming by on short notice to talk about it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Well, later, don't miss it as we speak with actor and director Daniel Baldwin about his appearance this weekend at the St. Augustine Film Festival. But up next, how teens in the Duval County Schools are reaching out to mentor their much younger peers. We'll tell you about teen trendsetters next.
Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about The Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Our expectations about each other,
blind people can't do those things,
profoundly affect the way that things unfold. So what would happen if we changed our expectations?
I can honestly say that I do not feel blind.
Could a person who is blind come to see? I'm Elise Spiegel, co-host of Invisibilia. Our next show, Expectations. Tune in.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Listen to the Great American Songbook every Sunday night at 9 o'clock, only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Let's fall in love. Why shouldn't we fall in love? Our hearts are made of it.
Welcome back. Well, for many at-risk students, establishing a one-on-one relationship with a caring adult can make a big difference in their lives. Communities in Schools of Jacksonville doesn't only provide middle school and high school mentoring programs, it also supports teen trendsetters. Now, that's an initiative that lets high school and middle school kids mentor elementary school students who are struggling in reading. January is National Mentoring Month, so here with more, we welcome Erin Achebach, Director of Resource Development with Communities in Schools, and good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And of course, kids need mentors. We typically think of them as caring adults. This is a way to get even middle and high school kids mentoring younger kids. It is called Teen Trendsetters. How does it all work?
Well, Melissa, Teen Trendsetters was a program started by the Barbara Bush Foundation for Family Literacy. And in partnership with Duval County Public Schools, they went into the high schools working with high school students and decided to bring them into the elementary schools, working with the elementary students on reading or homework and providing that additional support from somebody who might be a little closer to their age instead of necessarily the teachers or the adults. And it's shown to be very impactful not only on the elementary student, but also the high school student, giving them a little more confidence in themselves, some motivation, and sometimes promoting them to want to do certain things in their career.
That's terrific. Yeah, they both benefit. And I would think the dynamic is so different when you have two kids together rather than an adult coming in to work with a kid.
Right. And any student who's in school, so, you know, I remember when I was in school thinking about adults, they don't know anything or they don't understand how it is for me. So by having that little bit of an age gap that's not as large, they might be a little more comfortable around another student who's still in school.
Yeah, they'll probably be more willing to open up a little sooner.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So many benefits to this.
There is, and it's something we would love to see grow into many of the schools here in Duval County. I believe now we're in 10 different schools, high school and middle school, with these students going over to the elementary.
And tell us about a couple of the students. In particular, you had a ninth grader named Natasha who was really struggling. She had the benefit of getting a mentor, and she did so well, she decided to turn around and become a mentor herself.
That's right. Natasha was one of our students, part of our high school mentoring program. We started that up last year where we're connecting high school students now with mentors. And because of the help that she had received from her mentor, she felt intrigued to give back as well. And she now goes over on a weekly basis to the elementary school. And actually, our site staff over there told us she's one of the better Teen Trendsetter mentors. So she's really grown both in herself and now is giving back.
So, as you mentioned, you're in 10 schools, but you want to expand.
We would love to expand our mentoring programs. We are in 10 middle schools with the Achievers for Life program, which is funded by United Way. And then we are also in another 5 schools for our high school mentoring. But Teen Trendsetters works with us in multiple schools, as well as a couple other organizations here in Jacksonville, to bring that in. But it's such a valuable tool for students of all grades and all ages that it could be really helpful. And like I said, it's a benefit to the high school student because it motivates them to want to do better so that they can be an example for the younger group.
So how are you hoping to get more people involved?
I would love if people would come out and get involved. There's an interview process, a background screening. We like to get to know the mentor so we know exactly how to get them matched up, and they might influence a high school student to also mentor themselves. So
if any parents are listening right now, this is something, an opportunity for their child.
Absolutely. If a parent, we've gotten phone calls of parents saying their son or their daughter really could use a mentor. So please reach out to us at our office, 366-6350, or of course our website, cisjacks.org. We all have all of our information on there, and we'd love to get more people involved because mentoring has really proven to be a benefit to anybody.
It is National Mentoring Month. The program is Teen Trendsetters. Erin, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Erin Achebach is Director of Resource Development with Jacksonville's Communities in Schools. Well, up next, The Spectator has a look at all this weekend's events, but don't miss it as well as we welcome actor and director Daniel Baldwin, the Baldwin brother, talking about his new film screening this weekend. He'll be making a personal appearance, too, at the St. Augustine Film Festival. That's next.
from the moment you wake up through the chaos of your busy morning, Morning Edition is there with you.
Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep. Protesters have been
through all you have to do, we'll bring you all you need to know every weekday on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Edelman takes the swing pass. Edelman's going to throw. Deep downfield, wide open. Amendola, touchdown.
Veteran sportscaster Al Michaels knows how to call a touchdown. On the next Fresh Air, he joins us to talk about his craft, his career, and working his ninth Super Bowl next weekend. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Travel back in time with Radio Theater, Doo-Wop Revival, The Great American Songbook, and Juke Joint. Throwback Sunday, Sunday nights beginning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. Looking forward to looking back.
The Soviet hockey team of the 70s and 80s was one of the greatest sports dynasties ever. Filmmaker Gabe Polsky says the Red Army team was not just a source of national pride.
It was a propaganda tool for the Soviet Union to show how dominant and superior their society was.
Gabe Polsky's film, Red Army, today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
All right, here's a question that almost answers itself. Why is it such a big deal to be Apple's default search engine?
You know, more than 53% of search is coming from smartphones, and a big, big part of the smartphone market is owned by Apple.
I'm Kai Ryssdal. Google, Bing, and Yahoo, oh my. That's next time on Marketplace from APM. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, in a State of the Union address, President Obama called for changes to the tax code to address rising inequality. Debate over raising taxes on capital gains, closing the trust fund loophole, and prospects for compromise in a Republican-led Congress.
Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
This week on Closing the Loop, Dave Hoste didn't become a golf pro until he was nearly 60. He isn't a PGA member, and he's dealt with all sorts of career and life issues. But he can hit a golf ball a very long way, and he can show someone else how to do it. Closing the Loop, Fridays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered, on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning.
Well, this weekend's fifth annual St. Augustine Film Festival will have some star power. Actor, writer, and director Daniel Baldwin, who you've seen in dozens of films, and of course NBC's Homicide, CBS's Cold Case, Hawaii Five-0. He'll be on hand to intro his new movie, The Wisdom to Know the Difference. This sobriety-themed drama stars Baldwin and his brother, Billy. Daniel Baldwin is on the line now with a preview. Hey, Daniel Baldwin, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Exciting to get you on the show. And so this film, The Wisdom to Know the Difference, sounds really interesting. You and your brother Billy appear, and it stems from some of your real-life experiences getting sober, correct?
It is. It's loosely based on a few different people I knew in my early sobriety. And the story basically is about a man who had a lot of troubles in his teens and his 20s. And he woke up one morning in a cell in Northern California with blood all over the front of his body and had no recollection because he was in a drug-induced coma from drinking and using that night. And it turned out that he stabbed the man 17 times in the chest and murdered him. He did 25 years in prison for murder. And while he was in prison, he found God. And he also got sober. And the story starts after he got out. He became quite a guru in prison for sobriety. And when he got out, a former prisoner who was the head of the gang, who's played by Lou Diamond Phillips, asked him, "Can you help me with my niece? She's having a lot of trouble, and she can't seem to get her life together, and she's doing, you know, really bad things. And he said, well, how can I help someone that doesn't want to get sober? And he said, I really don't care how you do it. Just help me, Bob, is the name of the character. And so Bob drugs her and kidnaps her and brings her up to a cabin. And she wakes up in this remote cabin up in the in Big Bear. And she says, who are you? And he said, you're here for the next 30 days. I'm going to detox you off the heroin and teach you how to get sober. And he actually did this, this friend of mine. And so it's a very powerful, there's a lot of God message in it, and there's a lot about sobriety. But it's a pretty cool little film. We've been in five festivals now, and we've won Best Picture 5 times. So it's been very helpful, also instrumental in stimulating other people and inspiring them to want to get sober.
That's terrific. Because as people struggle with addiction, so many can relate to this story. And in fact, the title even comes from the Serenity Prayer, which people say at 12-step meetings, right?
Yeah, they do. They open and close most meetings with the Serenity Prayer. And a lot of people ask me, why did you indeed use? Because it's a bit of a long title. And I said, well, there was two reasons. I said, number one, anyone that's in the 12-step or in and out or knows about 12 steps will recognize that immediately, and that will probably stimulate them to try to want to find out more about the film. And number two, there's two more stanzas in there, so if the movie was any good, I'd have two sequels.
it's great subject matter, and of course there's interest too, because not only do you direct and star, you've got your younger brother Billy in the film. What's it like to work with one of your brothers on this project?
Well, it was the first time any of us have directed one another, and I'll tell you, there was a couple of things working for me. Probably three. One, I'm older than him. Number two, I can still beat him. I can still beat him up. And number three, I can call my mom and just say, Billy's not cooperating. My mom will call and make me do what I say. So all three of those at different points I had to bring in to play. But it was strange that, you know, I wrote the part for Billy, and there's a moment in there when Bob tells Dennis, his
and
brother.
Do you play Bob?
I play Bob. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you get a chance, or if you'll actually have time to come to the festival, you'll see Bob is a very strange character. I had to physically was challenging to do all the squinting and the weird stuff that Bob did. And Bob, you know, although I don't know anything about his childhood, he's almost kind of a savant, autistic in some ways, some of his traits, not over the top wise, you know, not as far as like a Forrest Gump or in Rain Man. But certainly there were factors about him that were, and his voice quality is very strange. And so to direct and to play that character and literally have to, okay, we're ready for that shot. All right, great. Then you move over here, you move over here, and then call action and then go into a character who talks like this and had very long holds on some of his words.
All right. Yeah, that, yeah. I've always wondered about that, what it's like to star in a project and direct yourself. That's certainly challenging.
Well, I remember I did, I think it was Jay Leno. It was Matt Lauer interviewed me one morning, and I was on Good Morning America or Today or one of those shows, and he said, you know, why did you want to become, all four brothers become an actor? I said, well, for me, the reason why is because the great license I have in the workplace. I said, because I'm never wrong. And he looked at me and he said, I understand. I said, well, I say the line the way I look at it and when I read it and the way I perceive it. The director may come out from behind the camera and say, hey, do me a favor, do that much more angry. But that's just what he wanted. That didn't make me wrong. So it really is a great license to be able to do whatever it is you think and have that kind of range in your life in the workplace, because very few places is there not someone telling you that you're not doing it the way they want it done.
Isn't that the truth? And, you know, it's going to be exciting for people that come out to the festival, because you're going to do a Q&A and make a personal appearance this weekend in St. Augustine.
I shall be in St. Augustine. Are you going to come to be able to make it to the show?
I want to come. And by the way, Daniel, not only is your film there, they're going to have 26 films from 11 countries. It's a major film festival.
Yes, and it's growing, so it's very exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting to speak with you. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes on the phone. We really appreciate it. Have fun in St. Augustine.
I will, and I hope I get a chance to meet you. God bless everyone listening, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much. He's actor, writer, and director Daniel Baldwin. He is the star and director of the new film, The Wisdom to Know the Difference, one of a couple of dozen films screening this weekend at the 5th Annual St. Augustine Film Festival. Kicks off tomorrow and runs through Sunday at the Flagler College Lewis Auditorium and also on two screens at the Corazon Cinema in St. Augustine, 26 films from 11 countries. Daniel Baldwin's film, I believe, is screening on Sunday, and he will do that personal Q&A, so a great opportunity to come out and enjoy that. And we'll be back in a moment with a look at all this weekend's events.
This Week in This American Life, Jeff had a webcam on a wild osprey nest with a female bird and three hatchlings. And lots of people watched.
And then it all blew up when she started attacking the young.
Jeff started getting emails demanding that he do something, remove or kill the mom.
Momzilla. That was the name they gave her.
This week, Saturday afternoons at 2 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
On the next Radio Lab, what's going on inside our guts?
25 feet of coiled, soiled, fetid tubing.
Corned beef.
Meat and bread and coffee.
Salt.
Pastrami sandwich.
Mini burgers.
It's steamy.
I don't know, it's like bubbly.
Kind of disgusting.
But fascinating.
Thousands of species that are living inside of you and preying on each other.
The mysteries of the human gut, this week on Radio Lab.
Saturdays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
And welcome back. Lots going on all around town this weekend. Lots of options. From the opening of White at Mocha to the music of ABBA and Merle Haggard, here to take us all around town. As she is every Thursday, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, Jacksonville Magazine's Carrie Speckman here today.
Yay for me.
We had a Baldwin brother on the show. Can you believe that?
I was so excited when I walked in and saw Daniel Baldwin's name.
Yeah,
and
on the calendar.
Yes, foiled again.
Yeah.
And I just saw him on Hawaii 5-0.
That's right. Unfortunately, he was by phone, but you can go meet him this weekend in St. Augustine.
I could.
How about
and
that?
And by meet, do you mean stalk?
Well, you are known for that, Spectator.
I kind of am.
Now, he is probably not the most famous of the Baldwin brothers.
Correct.
But he's definitely up there.
Yes.
You know, and he is a Baldwin.
Yes.
Of course.
I think he's the oldest.
I think he's the second oldest.
But he's out there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true. Alex probably the oldest.
Yeah, Alex the oldest. So, okay. So that's happening this weekend, but that's
and
down.
And by the way, may I just interrupt for one moment?
You may.
If someone could learn how to spell spectator, Sean Birch. I see you gave up. It's not you. Not you.
Yeah.
Every time I come here, it's spelled differently, except today it just said Carrie Speckman.
They gave
so
up.
I think
they just gave up.
It had a hyphen last time. They always forget the K, or they put an O instead of the E.
Only you know how to spell, how to put the letters together in the way that conveys your fabulousness.
Well, that's probably bad marketing to have a name
that no one can spell. Wait, Sean is going to speak. Hang on, this is very important.
Yes. Carrie, just to interject here, I did do it last week. And I put a hyphen in there just to mess with you.
There's a hyphen. No, that's fine. It's all in good fun.
It's all in fun.
I figured you did.
All right.
Sneaky.
He is a
producer.
Sneaky
you.
Yes, he is. All right. What's happening this weekend?
What is happening tonight? Kathleen Madigan, who won an American Comedy Award for Best Female Comedian, and the Phyllis Diller Award.
They have a Phyllis Diller Award? That's excellent.
Do you think I just made that up?
No, Spectator. Never. Never.
She was also, people probably know her best for Last Comic Standing.
Oh, right. Okay.
But she's been doing her thing for, I don't know, like 25 years. But she will be at the Florida Theater tonight.
Excellent.
Kathleen Madigan.
Go on and see her at the Florida Theater. Also tonight, It's the opening night for Black Pearl Sings. This looks interesting.
Yes, it is a white song collector for the Library of Congress visits a Texas prison, and she meets Pearl, who's an African-American woman, with a soulful voice and a steely spirit. But what's interesting is the star, Jill Powell, she's been on Broadway and TV. She, I guess the original person got sick, so she has had a less than a week's notice.
To learn this part.
To learn this whole part.
Get out. That's excellent. That's a great opportunity. That's at the Atlantic Beach
Experimental Theater. Also known as ABET.
ABETtheater.com.
Yes.
Very nice. Black Pearl Sings, that's coming to town this weekend. Man, there's a lot of music going on.
I know.
We'll talk about ABBA the concert in a moment because that is very, very important.
And I am very sad that I did not get this to Sean earlier so he could bust out.
I know. With a little dancing
an ABBA
queen.
Song.
But first, it is Iris
Dement
coming into town.
Yes, she is. She's someone that, you know, a lot of people might not know, such as yourself, since you don't know how to say her name. But in
what are you talking about, spectator?
Iris.
You are so mean.
Am I?
Well, you know, she has appeared on A Prairie Home Companion.
I put that in there specifically.
So I
to
should
relate to your audience.
I should know
but
this.
But in her circles, you know, she's very, very well known. She'll be here Friday at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall.
Very nice.
And guys, I just want to interrupt again. I'm sorry.
God, Sean.
Iris Dement most famously did the song Our Town for Northern Exposure.
Yes, yes.
That's probably her big claim to
fame. Oh, there you go.
I didn't think anybody would remember that show.
I
of course, Sean Birch
would. I loved that show.
I loved that show, too. So Iris Dement Friday at Ponte Vedra Concert Hall. The boat show is this weekend.
The boat show. Yes, they will have a large variety of boats. Skiing boats, fishing boats, cruisers, personal watercrafts. And the first 100 kids on Saturday will receive a free life jacket.
Oh, that's important. That's
they're going to have seminars and all kinds of fun stuff.
Okay.
And that's at the Prime Osborne.
If you're a fan of ABBA.
Friday and, through Sunday.
And who isn't?
It's probably
ABBA,
someone.
It's ABBA the concert.
Not featuring the real ABBA.
No, it's
obviously.
The band. It's a tribute band. Waterloo.
Yes. Waterloo.
See, since we don't have the music, you can just do your own rendition. They're coming to the Florida Theater Saturday night?
Yes, they are. And they'll be, of course, performing all of their iconic hits, including that one that I just murdered.
No, actually, that sounded pretty good.
Waterloo, of course, Mamma Mia, and Dancing Queen, which I had on a 45.
Saturday night, Florida Theater. Yes. Also Saturday, it's the new exhibit at MoCA. This is called White.
Yes, and it's very interesting. I saw some of the pictures. Well, as can anyone who went on the website, but I actually saw a larger picture, and it's really kind of cool. I mean, it sounds weird, like, are there going to be just canvases that are white? But it's like there's some mixed media stuff, and it's going to be kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool, and they were excited the other day. Preston Haskell, the local philanthropist.
Dropped, I don't know, like $5 million.
Yep, the largest gift in their history. So get on out and support MoCA. That new exhibit is White. Meanwhile, it's the Black and Brown.
Speaking of colors,
the Black and Brown Comedy Throwdown. Cedric the Entertainer, D.L. Hughley, George Lopez, big names coming to
yes,
the arena.
Eddie Griffin, yeah, they will be at the arena on Saturday at 8. And yeah, that's a big bill right there.
Yeah, that is coming up this weekend. And then last but not least, let's talk about, oh man, really? Merle Haggard.
No, I just put it on there for fun.
You put that on there for fun?
Of course he's coming.
Merle
Haggard.
Why would
I do that? Yes, Merle Haggard. He will, Mama Tried is probably the song that people know most. And actually, I believe he did a duet with Iris Dement, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that is true.
Yes, he and his rusty voice will be performing. That's what it said. at Florida Theater, 7:30.
That's
on Sunday.
And get out and enjoy Restaurant Week on Amelia Island, too, through Sunday. So no shortage of stuff to do.
By the
weekend.
Way, speaking of Amelia Island, Kenny Gilbert, Chef Kenny Gilbert from Top Chef fame, he's about to be opening a restaurant called Gilbert's Underground in Fernandina.
Very nice. Isn't he opening one in downtown Jacksonville,
too?
He is, but
that one's going to take renovations and stuff. So,
right. You
know, if he didn't have something to do every 5 seconds, he's got to run, like, another restaurant.
Well,
he's a busy man.
He's a busy guy, but we will all benefit. Meanwhile, don't misspell spectator's name. When you go online to Google, type in spectator with a K.
.com. And an O.
And an O.
Not an E, even though I love tater tots.
And get all this weekend's events. Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch, and the show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got feedback about First Coast Connect, drop an email, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our daily podcasts. They are now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, in his State of the Union address, the president called for changes to the tax code to address rising inequality. Debate over raising taxes on capital gains, closing the trust fund loophole, and prospects for compromise in a GOP-led Congress. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.